The Singing Astronaut, written by Treggie D, and translated and narrated by Jocunda Sykes. Pairing Severus and Harry. Rating, explicit. Summary. Imagine, black space, a tiny moon orbiting Saturn. A young astronaut trapped amongst the boulders. Very little air is left in his oxygen tank. The astronaut throws his face back to the black sky dotted with large white stars. He licks his dry lips, and he starts to sing. Chapter 1. On the 2nd of May 2098, a tragedy unfolded, witnessed by the entire world. An English astronaut, buried alive on Saturn's moon Dione, is now known throughout the world as the Singing Astronaut. Dying, he hummed the words of an old aria, The Lament of Dido. At 17 hours, 48 minutes Earth time, his breathing stopped.
It's as if there's a heartbeat here.
His face, squeezed by the helmet, appears to be swollen. His eyes are impossibly bright. Lying eyes. Severus Snape turns away from the screen. He taps his fingers on the arm of the chair, then his knees, then stops his nervous movements by clenching his fists. The screens are everywhere. On every channel, on every news station, a 24-hour broadcast. Hurry to see the slow and painful death of an astronaut. Don't change the channel. Snape, General Moody says, frozen at the door. Severus rises from his chair, following the general past the screens. On them, the singing astronaut mutters,
A tremor from within, from somewhere in the centre of the moon. It's like a heart is beating.
The collapse occurred about 42 hours ago. Has the rescue cruiser been sent out?
Moody chews his lips, his face dry and wrinkled, impassive. Snape fixes his gaze at the screen over Moody's shoulder, where the singing astronaut moves his lips soundlessly.
Most likely the walls of the crater collapsed because of that tremor, Moody says, breaking the silence. Do you think that really happened?
Moody paces around the room, limping. He prefers not to sit. Snape sits in a low chair, trying to tear his gaze away from the screen. It's too quiet. The audio is on mute. The singing astronaut's lips move in vain.
We can't rule that out.
When Moody finally answers, Severus is already oblivious to his own question.
This is the unforeseen factor that was outlined in the contract.
Will you be sending backup? Severus asks bluntly. Moody sighs, puts his hands behind his back and looks at the screen. When he speaks, he seems to talk to the screen.
Boy knows things. Things that can't be talked about on the air. We can't disable the camera built into the helmet, just as we can't establish two-way communication. All we have to do is watch and wait for him to give out strategically important information.
Severus clenches his teeth. He knows these words are a death sentence for the singing astronaut. But he cannot remain silent. He has no right.
He won't tell. He won't say anything.
Moody nods. After a pause that lasts for an eternity, he confesses,
It's unlikely that we can help him in time.
The singing astronaut's confinement in ice has lasted 6 days. During that time, he was likely suffering from auditory and visual hallucinations, and also showing signs of confusion. Food and water ran out on the 3rd day, and the oxygen supply ran out on the 6th. The helmet's built-in camera lasts for many years. There were 2 of them. 2 applicants. 3, actually. But the 3rd was a backup. Only if something happened to the 1st 2. Severus scrutinised everyone's personal files. For him, the Dione project was a matter of, if not his whole life, then excruciatingly long years. His redemption. Neville Longbottom fit all the parameters, but there was mental illness in the family. A pity. Such an obedient, resilient young man. Harry Potter was an orphan, and that was a definite plus. The fewer loved ones left on Earth, the easier it is for the cruiser to lift off the ground. Severus knew this from his own experience. Problems arose at the interview with the psychologist.
Potter's character might impede a perfect, carefully polished operation. Draco Malfoy was one of the sponsors of the Dion A project. He was in good health, both physical and mental. He performed well in the simulators, except he pumped up on the centrifuge, but that was fixable. Severus wanted to work with Draco, but he had one drawback, perhaps even more significant than the others. Draco was not an orphan, and his parents were not locked up in an asylum. Draco Malfoy had a father. A father he'd be better off without. Lucius Malfoy was waiting for Severus in the study. "Don't let this happen." Severus rushed to close the blinds on instinct. There was no objective reason to hide his visit. Lucius could not tarnish Severus's reputation, for he had got away with it. Of course he had. "Get out," Severus said. Contradicting himself, he turned the lock on the door. His heart was beating too fast, and Severus did a rudimentary breathing exercise to calm himself. "Inhale, exhale, clear your mind." Severus was used to addressing himself imperatively. It always worked. "Won't you invite me to sit down?"
"You're already sitting down."
Lucius smiled.
"Yes, but that shouldn't stop you from showing your charming manners. Severus."
The phrase was painfully familiar, and Severus grinned wryly. It was strange to see the man who had brought your world down in front of you. It was strange to see him so welcoming and ordinary. Lucius hadn't changed. The same look, the same posture, the same Severus at the end of his sentences. Abruptly, separate from what was being said, as if Severus was reminding himself of his interlocutor's name for fear of forgetting. Oh yes, that would be unpleasant. Such bad taste.
"What do you want?"
"Tea, perhaps. Where is your secretary?"
"I have no secretary," he said through clenched teeth.
Lucius shook his head.
"Oh, how that upsets you." "Malfoy, I don't want to see you. All I have to do is call the guards and have you thrown out. Think about whether you want to go through with this."
Lucius gazed at Severus intently, as if studying how much his face had changed over the years. He must be surprised at how quickly I've aged, Severus thought distantly. He himself was puzzled by this. But he was even more amazed that he had survived.
"All right, I didn't come to quarrel, Severus. I hope you understand me."
Severus chuckled, expressing his attitude towards this naive hope. Lucius continued in a soft voice.
"Draco, my son, is one of the applicants. I'm sure you know that yourself. I found out you're in charge of the project.
This means that the deciding vote is yours. Severus, don't let this happen. Don't let Draco fly."
"Why not? Isn't this an honour for your kind?" Severus asked mockingly.
He liked the way a momentary spasm distorted Lucius's handsome features when Severus struck a nerve.
"Draco fits every requirement. He has a good chance."
"Damn it! He's just a child. I don't want him dying for the state."
"You've never been very patriotic." "Don't you think Draco is correcting your mistakes?"
And he'd hit the target again. Seeing the pain in Lucius's eyes was so sweet, so right.
"Draco won't fly. I am categorically against it."
"He's an adult. He can decide for himself." "That's why I'm here, humiliating myself in front of you."
"Oh, you're not humiliating yourself yet," Severus whispered, barely audible.
"Trust me, Lucius. You haven't heard real humiliation."
Lucius jumped up from his chair and stepped towards Severus, who instantly swayed towards him, and for several seconds they stood nose to nose, tense, eyes locked on the other. Then Lucius stepped back, just a tiny step. Barely noticeable, but it was a defeat.
"I can pay more than half the costs if need be. I have far more money than Draco." "It's a pathetic offer, you know that."
"You just haven't given it much thought. Next project, Severus. Think. After all, you want to continue working. I know you, your ambition. Severus, if any mistakes were to occur with this..."
"Mistakes?" Severus hissed, instantly chilling.
"No. Enough."
Lucius's words sounded like a grim prophecy, and only Severus's sense of dignity prevented him from knocking on wood.
"There will be no mistakes. I am personally overseeing this project, which means everything will go perfectly. Get out. You won't buy me, you won't intimidate me, and flattery won't work. It won't work a second time.
After a pause, Severus added,
Don't think I'm stupid. I know it was you. Because of you, they branded me a traitor. Because of you. I don't need your money. Stay away from me and from the project. Do not try to discover anything else if you do not want me to throw all my strength into restoring justice. You know I can get it.
It was a bluff. Severus had already come face to face with crushing, devastating powerlessness. How frightening it is when they don't believe you. Whatever you say, whatever you do, it's meaningless, empty, it doesn't matter. Because they don't believe you. They were partners many years ago, in bed and in scientific pursuits. Severus didn't trust Lucius, he didn't trust anyone at all. But still, he couldn't imagine that Lucius would hand over the plans and formulae created by Severus to the Lord and Nagini, the Liberal Organization of the Russian Directorate, and the National Alliance of Germany, Italy, Norway and Iberia were enemies of Albion. They tried Severus for espionage. Their interrogations, there were years of imprisonment. There was despair so deep that from its depths, like a well, the stars could be seen at all hours of the day. Stars. Space. His way of life. What he lived for. Now he'd a chance to re-establish himself, and he was not going to miss it. There have already been two landings on Saturn's moon Dione. An astronaut from Lord and another from Albion. Both the former and the latter were looking for Dionium. The perfect weapon, Severus had said, striding past the line of applicants. An ideal weapon. With it, we shall be able to... He allowed himself a brief chuckle at the smooth, boyish faces that hadn't a trace of intelligence. Perform magic. This was his parting speech. He preferred not to communicate with people unnecessarily, to observe instead with cameras, to find out the most insignificant details of a biography whilst remaining at a safe distance. On the rare occasions when Severus condescended to communicate in person, he admonished applicants with an affectionate, "If even one of you is worthy to pass these tests, I personally will be incredibly surprised." Moody handled the boys. He did it well. All his speeches about the lingering Cold War, about tyranny, about future generations. All his tales of saving the world. "You're the chosen one, my boy," he'd said to the green-eyed Harry Potter. "You'll save us all." Severus looked at Potter's trusting face and smirked. The singing astronaut looked into the camera. The singing astronaut looked straight into your soul. 4 hours and 18 minutes Earth time, the third day of confinement. The singing astronaut lipped his dry lips and began singing in a brittle voice.
"Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. Up above the world so high, like a diamond in the sky."
In the end, Severus relented. Narcissa came to him, to his flat, and begged almost on her knees. Malfoy wanted humiliation. He'd sent his wife to humiliate herself. She was up to the task. She cried and grabbed Severus by the hand and reminded him of their old friendship. She didn't say a word about the dirty, embarrassing thing that had happened between Severus and Lucius. Either she was a clever woman, or she really had no idea. But Severus, waiting for a tongue-lashing or a slap in the face, ultimately relented in gratitude for her silence. Narcissa asked to swear a vow, as if they were in ancient times. Severus swore that Draco would not fly. 1.5 years after that conversation, watching the singing astronaut repeat in a tinny voice,
"Oxygen indicator at 2 and 9. Oxygen indicator at 2 and 9.
Severus wondered if she'd guessed. Could she have guessed? Sensed how this flight would end, thanks to female intuition or a mother's instinct? Harry revealed that his mother had died protecting him. Severus thought she'd done it too soon.
"What the hell are you doing, motherfucker?" Moody seems even more hideous when he screams. His infrared eye threatens to pop out of its socket and roll across the floor.
Severus had never seen this happen, but he could imagine this all too clearly.
May I ask the reason for your intervention, General?
You're the reason, fuck knows.
Moody's intemperance is the talk of the town. Somehow it hasn't become a weakness, rather the opposite, cause for sympathy. Perhaps such an ugly, old, dry creature really did need a reason. It's easier to see the man underneath when he yells and spits saliva. Severus is disgusted by that. He never oversteps his bounds, never violates the chain of command. He doesn't need anybody's sympathy. Respect would be enough for him.
I am the coordinator of this project, its leader. According to the Charter, I am responsible for, according to the Charter, an unforeseen factor of natural origin cannot require the intervention of leaders on Earth. My crew is there, General Moody.
Are you fucking stupid? You were told, no consequences, no responsibility. This is an inherent risk. You knew this could happen. Learn to accept defeat.
Moody coughs, punching the hull of the cruiser in anger. Severus stands very straight. His pocket screen shows the singing astronaut with his eyes closed.
You can't fly, Moody says. You're needed here. This is your project. See it through to the end.
That's exactly what I intend to do. You can't fly, Moody repeats. I am medically fit. I am in the acceptable age range. I have experience. I've flown Moody. I can handle it. I'll get him out. I'll even scrape up some damned Ionium for you. I'll get us all out of this bullshit.
As Severus assumed, Moody should be spoken to in his own language. He wipes his lips with the palm of his hand, looks at the screen, then, with sudden pity, at Snape.
I'm doing this for Albion, Severus says quickly. I'm doing this for myself. Can't afford to fail, Moody. I've worked on this for many years. You know that.
Severus hears how unconvincing his own words sound. The singing astronaut on the screen opens his eyes. He speaks, pushing the words out between tightly pressed lips.
And that case, with the letter. Now, I have no reason to lie, you know. I had nothing to do with it. I didn't tell you then because I knew it was no use.
You'll be late, Moody says, staring at Severus.
Moody and his ilk don't respect personal space. They always stand too close, look too directly. They always tell the unpleasant truth.
Both of you will die because of stupid sentimentality. There's nothing worse than when personal feelings get involved. You should have learnt that lesson.
Severus still doesn't know if Moody believed him then or not. All interrogations ended in the same way. Severus was carried away, and Moody had hacking coughs. Even now, working together, Severus hesitates to ask if he still has the stigma of being a traitor, or if he is finally pardoned.
Nothing personal, I tell you, Severus says flatly. No sentimentality.
I didn't make excuses then,
the singing astronaut says.
All right, Moody grunts, grimacing.
I probably got cold feet,
the singing astronaut says.
I depart tonight, Severus tells Moody's back.
It's scary when you're not believed,
the singing astronaut says. Severus places his hand on his chest, where a pocket screen flashes over his heart. By the third day, the broadcast from inside the astronaut's helmet, trapped in the rubble in one of Dione's craters, hadn't stopped. This moon consists mainly of ice and rocks, reported a woman, in a dark blue austere suit, her face occupying 1/8 of the screen, a tiny square in the corner. The face of the singing astronaut took up almost the entire display. His eyes seemed unusually bright. Trapped in rock and ice and rock, the singing astronaut sang the nursery rhyme over and over. Hurry up and see this exclusive broadcast. Don't change the channel.
When the blazing sun is gone, when he nothing shines upon, then you show your little light. Twinkle, twinkle, all the night.
Chapter 2. With 7 months left before liftoff, Severus began personally tutoring the prime candidate, Harry Potter. As much as Severus wanted to entrust this job to someone else, he believed too much in the expression, if you want something done perfectly, do it yourself. Severus greatly wanted everything to be perfect. Harry Potter didn't make much of an impression on him. His athletic training was definitely a plus, but otherwise he was a complete non-starter. This was especially true of the theoretical foundations. Severus was horrified when he reviewed the test results. He began tutoring Harry himself, and one cannot say that he was a patient teacher.
Distinguishing features of dionium?
Crystalline, low temperature,
be precise,
-322 Fahrenheit,
326.
326, Potter repeated obediently, burying his nose in his notebook. Snape stood next to the desk, arms folded. He stared at the ugly mess that was apparently a hairstyle. Potter's hair sticking out in every direction as if illustrating the concept of chaos.
Anything else?
That's all.
Who discovered the moon?
Which one, sir?
Dione, Potter! Don't dodge the question.
I don't know, sir, he mumbled.
What function cannot be set by the intelligence system of a cruiser whilst in orbit around a planet?
I don't know, sir.
What is the atmosphere on Dione?
Absent.
Incorrect, Potter. Dione has an atmosphere with a density of 1 ion per 11 cubic centimetres. Whilst in orbit, you cannot set it at maximum acceleration. Dione was discovered by Giovanni Cassini and was later named by Herschel in honour of the sister of Cronus, the Titan. In Greek mythology, he is called Saturn, and the main distinguishing feature of Dione is colour.
Colour, Potter. Bright green, like your eyes. Having spat that out in one breath, Snape turned and walked swiftly towards the virtual board to type up a list of literature.
It's preferable that by the next lesson you not only read these books, but also remember something from them.
Potter gazed hatefully. Snape could barely control the urge to punch the dunderhead. In his reports, Severus indicated that Potter was still worthy of the mission entrusted to him.
You are the chosen one, my boy. You will save the world, were Moody's cynical words.
Dionium, the perfect weapon Albion so desperately needs.
You will save the world.
Or destroy it. When there were 6 months left to go before liftoff, lessons had to be held less frequently. Harry was never out of the training hall, perfecting his knowledge of space mechanics. Severus didn't interfere with these lessons. He was up to his eyeballs in his own affairs. He didn't come to the space base at all these days, preferring to work in the silence of his office at the Science Centre. From time to time, he inquired about the applicant's progress. The trainer reported that Harry was performing amazingly well during the training programme. From the flight hall, Harry went to the simulators. One day, when Severus arrived at the base to speak with Moody, he saw Harry sliding down the wall. His tracksuit was tight, his cheeks flushed, his hair damp with sweat and stuck to his forehead. Harry's eyes were dim.
Potter, get up. Have you overtrained?
Harry lifted his head, his movement slow, diffuse.
Sir,
he clamped the palm of his hand over his mouth. Snape picked Harry up by the armpits and roughly set him on his feet, then literally carried him to the nearest toilet. Whilst Harry shuddered over the sink, Snape looked tactfully at the tiles littered with inscriptions and doodles, including caricatures of the fucknose. Snape didn't care about petty tricks, but he was always ready for big ones. Moody was right about constant vigilance. If Severus had listened to him earlier, he wouldn't have spent 11 years of his life in jail.
Sorry.
Snape winced and turned around. Harry shifted beside the sink, turning the tap all the way off. His face was sickly pale in the dim square of the mirror. Only his eyes burned brighter than ever, and those very eyes followed Snape's face in the reflection.
Will you include this in the report?
Harry spoke calmly, as if he didn't care. Only his fingers scratched frantically at the smooth edges of the basin. Severus arched an eyebrow.
Should I?
Harry pressed his lips together. How he hates me, Severus suddenly realised with a tinge of surprise. Him and all of them, the rest. I decide their fate, but my fate depends on them too. How can they not understand that? I risk so much, but how he hates me.
Did you experience any discomfort before you started training?
No, sir. I felt sick in the centrifuge, but it was bearable. A
I finished my session, checked myself out on the log, went into the corridor, and only then did I need to sit down.
Any other symptoms besides nausea?
None, sir. A straight face. Potter lied, but how was Severus to know? He should have known.
Show yourself to Dr. Pomfrey. Get it once over. Form 1. Say private and confidential. The report is to go straight to my desk. You may go.
Will you include that in your report, sir?
Are you hard of hearing? Go, Potter.
Mr. Snape, just tell me any more and I'll be forced to reprimand you.
You know what this threatens.
Potter gritted his teeth. He was tense, his whole body a string. He turned and walked out, not dignifying Severus with another glance. Water flooded down the ceramic of the overflowing sink. According to anonymous sources, the singing astronaut was sent to Dione on a research mission. He descended to the bottom of the crater when there was a powerful tremor. According to the singing astronaut himself, a tremor from within, from somewhere in the centre of the moon. It's like a heart is beating. The crater walls collapsed, trapping the young astronaut. Buried under ice and rocks, he is unable to move and can only speak. Only incredible fortitude and a will of steel stops him from panicking. Our correspondent learned the singing astronaut had been on the brink of death once before. During the Scarlet Night, the horrific terrorist attack on hundreds of homes with small children that we all remember. A terrible fate passed him by, in some sort of, there is no other way to put this, miracle, but also took away the most precious thing in the world, his parents. Anonymous sources, Severus thinks. Damn them. At present, there is no such thing as privacy. Nothing is sacred in our world, Severus thought. Not when thousands of journalists who sold their souls are fighting over the possibility to broadcast the last seconds of his life. The last hours. The last days. Severus stares without looking away. The purpose of the research is still being clarified. Stay tuned for more on the fate of the singing astronaut. The woman in the tiny square in the corner of the screen looks miserable. The singing astronaut moves his lips as if he were reading or recalling a poem. He'll run out of water tonight, Severus thinks. The flight departs tonight. There are too many formalities to sort out, too many rules to break. Moody won't give up. He's willing to risk it for Dionium. The Admiral of the Fleet will close his eyes too. Not for Dionium, but to save Albion's reputation. All hail free speech. All hail broadcasts. All hail for the ends justifying the means. For the greater good. For mass information. There'll be no problem with the higher-ups. But then there's Dr. Pomfrey. And that's whom Severus fears most. He would be afraid, if he thought everything through. Too much to do, too little time. And Severus keeps staring and staring at the screen, at the singing astronaut, trying to remember a single verse.
The oxygen indicator is 6 and 8,
the singing astronaut says. Too little time. With 5 months to go before liftoff, Lupin intervened. Severus, you totally ground him down. Look at the lad, Severus. He needs a break. A break? Who doesn't? Potter is responsible for his own actions. Look at the boy. As if Severus does anything else besides looking, looking, looking at bloody Potter. The boy. But he's not a boy anymore. Not a boy. And you can see it more and more clearly. By his straight, calm gaze, which doesn't hide his eyes. No, he's no longer timid. His face has thinned, matured, become more grown up, more severe or something. Space seems to change people. But the grueling months of training, drills, exercises, waiting, they also change a man. They shape. Burning to the ground and rising from the ashes, metaphorically speaking. Not just the face, the body too. Potter's height is average, it doesn't matter in space. Potter has a strong torso, solid muscles and, importantly, a good vestibular system. Severus, 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 Lupin clung on and kept up, his fidgety movements, his soft tone. His familiarity, Severus. If from Lucius's lips that name fell like a pebble, a stone under his feet, from Lupin's his name came out soft, like everything else about this wretched man. Severus was against Remus Lupin's candidacy for the role of guardian of applicants. But no matter what Lucius imagined, Severus was not all-powerful when it came to this project. For example, in order to get Lupin sacked, he had to work very hard. Why did everyone love him so much? Quiet, stooped, nondescript. He was always happy to talk, but never said anything of substance. Even after years of work, Severus couldn't tell what kind of man he was. A dark horse. Lupin got along well with people. This was indicated in his profile. He was probably a good guardian. The applicants tailed him, and he'd drag them away for a cup of tea whenever there was a spare moment. The applicants weren't allowed tea, but Lupin was, so he drank it whilst they watched, and everyone was happy. What they talked about behind the closed doors of the guardian's office, what kind of conversations they had, Severus didn't know. But he suspected that they were discussing him as well. Mocking him, perhaps. After all, he was hated fiercely by all the applicants, this younger generation, these arrogant young men. Of course they complained to the guardian about evil Snape. And it was unlikely that Lupin stood up in his defence. None of this bothered Severus. He tended to ignore the very existence of Lupin altogether until Lupin got attached to him about Harry. Severus, we need to talk. As always, he grabbed Severus by the elbow and held him until Severus stared expressively at his hand. Then Lupin feigned embarrassment, stepped back, but continued to stare insistently at Severus. For once, he was frowning instead of smiling. He looked anxious and, frankly, ill. Harry needs to take a break.
What? Can't take him to a spa? There are 5 months until departure, Lupin.
He's at the end of his rope. Harry's already ahead of the programme. He did well on his last training flight and on his tests.
You don't have to tell me. I am well aware of the results of our applicants.
Well, then you know all about it yourself. He's doing well. He can handle it.
He will, Severus confirmed without blinking an eye, if he keeps up the pace.
Lupin came in from the other side. Have you heard of the term emotional burnout?
Severus grimaced. Potter sees a psychologist once a week. They've not contacted me, so everything is in order.
It's not in order. You don't see him. Only yesterday did we have a lesson. Yes, you see him, but you don't see him. Otherwise you would have noticed a long time ago. I talk a lot with Harry. You could say we've become friends. And I can tell you right now, another week or two and he'll snap. I don't know how he'll snap or what the consequence will be, but it won't be good for sure. We can't let that happen. Look, Severus, he's not sleeping well. He's not interested in anything but training. He's stopped smiling.
Oh, well, let us panic. The applicant isn't smiling.
Severus looked heavenwards.
He tried to remember what Potter looked like in class. He answered normally. He finally got something into that stupid head at last. But other than that,
Potter hid his gaze. Yes, Severus remembered now. He hid his gaze and never retaliated.
I'm not asking for anything special. Give him a rest. A week. Even 4 days is enough. Just let him leave the base. It's not good to be in a confined space for so long. You know full well that applicants aren't allowed to leave surveillance. If we let him go into town, he'll gorge himself on sweets or get drunk or do some stupid other thing.
Severus protested languidly. Now he began to worry himself.
Harry is a serious young man. He lives only in anticipation of liftoff. This is his dream, his whole life. He won't risk that dream for sweets or alcohol.
Noticing that Severus was about to say something, Lupin hastily continued, I'll accompany him. As it happens, Harry and I have a mutual acquaintance. I went to school with him and he's a friend of the Potter family. I mean, he was their friend. Before they died.
Spare me the details.
This was all in the personnel file.
You want Potter to meet him?
Yeah, he's a funny man. It wouldn't hurt to cheer Harry up a bit. And I'll make sure Harry doesn't break the regime. I promise he'll even go to bed before 10.
Severus sighed. He rubbed the bridge of his nose. After all, Lupin, as guardian, could go over Severus's head for permission.
That Lupin had asked him spoke volumes about his prudence. Perhaps a couple of days wouldn't hurt anyone.
Lupin smiled widely as Severus nodded. He made a gesture as if he wanted to pat on the shoulder or a hug, but Severus recoiled.
Lupin's smile faded, but didn't disappear.
Anyway, Harry should have a life of his own outside the project, he said finally.
Severus was surprised.
He'd thought about this a lot, going over the phrase in his head this way and that when he got home that evening. Should? Really? But Lupin had no life of his own. Single, no friends, no sexual partners for years. He spends his weekends at the base, entertaining the candidates with conversations. Doesn't even own a house. Mortgaged it, then sold it when the recession hit. Lupin fought in the Borderlands, and now licks his wounds. The base is a safe and pleasant place for people like him. For those who want to pretend nothing is happening. As if there's no war. Who has this? A life of their own, anyway. Moody has long been a fixture at the base, like a training hall or canteen. Even the Admiral of the Fleet is rumoured to have been single all his life. Albion is my family. This is quite in his spirit. A life of their own. An impermissible luxury when everyone's life is shared. Whether for good or ill, general, reusable, cheap, like a plastic tray in the canteen, or a soldier amid battle. Lying in bed, Severus closes his eyes. In an empty bedroom. In a cramped flat. In a silent building. Harry's not sleeping well. Severus wonders what Harry thinks about at night. Probably about Dione. About a round, grey ball in the black density of space. About vastness. About stars. About loneliness. Severus closes his eyes and sees the stars. If one presses their fingers to their eyelids hard, they appear. They appear out of the darkness, as if on a faulty screen, dim at first, small, like breadcrumbs. But they get closer and closer, brighter and brighter. Bright green. His eyelids hurt, his fingers are too cold, always too cold. And the stars get closer and closer, and it seems he's falling towards them, falling into them, going blind. When it hurts too much, he opens his eyes. Severus has done this trick many times. It was the only way he could travel through space. They wouldn't let him go anymore. He didn't deserve it. They didn't trust him. Severus gritted his teeth every time his thoughts returned to this. And they kept returning. Betrayed by his own country for appearing to be a traitor. Betrayed by Albion. Albion had never been Severus's family. Severus would die for Albion. He could. But he could never love his country. After how many interrogations did Severus decide he no longer had a country? After the third, the fourth, the 20th? It seemed they'd never end. They would end before Severus did. Severus had no country, had no family, almost no belongings, just a few books, clothes, and an old disc of his mother's. It had her favourite song, Dido's Aria. Mother must have liked to imagine herself as her. Dido threw herself into the fire, unable to bear her lover's infidelity. Mother could only fall to the floor, unable to resist after another blow from father. Maybe she imagined she was being knocked down by the great power of love. No, Severus had no life of his own. He closed his eyes and ordered himself to sleep because there was a lot of work to be done the next day. There was always a lot of work to be done the next day. Severus closed his eyes and saw green flashes.
Happy?
Moody leans towards the microphone. Severus is relieved, realising that he won't be stopped now. He can't stop himself now either. Seatbelts fastened, countdown on one screen, the singing astronaut on the other. The airlocks are opening.
Don't you go and die a hero's death out there,
he says, his lips almost touching the microphone.
You're needed here. You're the brains of this operation.
He tries to speak indifferently, but his voice trembles. Thank you. He hasn't enough breath. Severus closes his eyes and remembers his breathing practice. That's better. When he opens his eyes, the screen is already glowing blue. 3, 2, 1, go. Chapter 3.
1 in 7. 1 in 6 already.
The singing astronaut coughed and pressed his lips together fearfully. He had bags under his eyes, and his eyeballs took on a strange bluish hue. There was no ice or stone in the camera's field of view, only his face framed by the smooth walls of his helmet. The singing astronaut seemed to be trapped in himself.
You will come, won't you?
He's barely audible. And then, changing his mind, he sings.
Then the traveller in the dark thanks you for your tiny spark. He could not see which way to go if you did not twinkle so.
4 months before liftoff. The reserve applicants hardly spoke to Potter. Envy or something else. Not that Severus was used to noticing things like that. But now, with Lupin's dismissal, he had to be more careful. Maybe it had been a bad idea to get him sacked. Now Potter had no one to talk to. But he and Lupin spent too much time together. Moreover, this mutual acquaintance of theirs turned out to be Sirius Black, a criminal. Severus kept repeating to himself it was interfering with the project. Like hell it did. Potter was lonely, too lonely. Like Albion, surrounded by water and enemy alliances. Like space. Like Severus. Sometimes Potter would stay up late after their lesson and they would talk. Severus wasn't used to talking about nothing, for no reason, with no business. He stiffened, irritated, afraid of blurting out the wrong thing. He didn't know why it was so important to maintain the flow of conversation. He lied to himself that it was all for the cause. Potter shouldn't be sad. Potter should be in good shape. If that required lingering after tutorials to exchange a few words, to be sarcastic, to earn that rare but so bright smile, Severus was ready to make these sacrifices. Sometimes he caught himself telling Potter things that were personal, secret, about his flight, his feelings. Memories, as dusty as treasures that had lain in a chest for too long, began to sparkle brighter under Harry's enthusiastic gaze. "Were you frightened?" Potter asked one day. Severus looked intently at Potter. "Are you frightened?" "I'm frightened that everything will fail. I really want to fly. I can't explain. This is bigger than me, more important than anything else."
"Has Moody brainwashed you with his great mission and saving the world?"
"No." Harry smiled shyly. He wrapped his arms around himself as if he were freezing. Severus stared down at the sturdy, short fingers.
"No?"
He arched an eyebrow and waited. Potter was silent for a long time. He seemed to have as much trouble finding the words as Severus. It seemed that conversations were difficult for him, too. "All this chatter, when you could just..." "What's the heaviest thing, out there in space?"
"You're weightless."
Harry laughed, and Severus flinched in surprise. No one had ever laughed at his jokes before. He hadn't joked with anyone before.
"The hardest part, perhaps, is the loneliness."
Every time, after talking to Harry, every time Severus felt as if he'd laid out more than he needed to, more than he should have. "It's the same on Earth," Harry said simply, staring at him with understanding. There couldn't, shouldn't have been that understanding. They were too different. What could the boy know? What could he possibly understand? Severus was suddenly angry, and he fled. He almost ran. And he heard the unspoken coward at his back.
"As your bright and tiny spark lights the traveller in the dark, though I know not what you are, twinkle, twinkle, little star."
The singing astronaut sang this, looking out into the camera the way you'd look into the eyes of a loved one. The question on everyone's mind today is, who owns the heart of the singing astronaut? Can this story get even more tragic? Stellar romance and space in his soul. The entire story of the singing astronaut has 12 pages of our special issue. 3 months before liftoff. Black was killed in riots which broke out in the town. There were many casualties, even more wounded. It was in the news. About the riots, not about Black. Severus learnt about him from Lupin. Lupin had only come to see him once, sitting on the sofa. his hands awkwardly folded between his knees. He looked exhausted and sickly. Severus forbade himself to feel sorry for him and immediately told the intruder, "I'm not going to help you get your job back." Lupin pretended to look surprised. Or maybe he really had come for another reason. It had been a hard, meaningless evening, and the walls of his old flat seemed to press in on them. Severus felt lousy as he saw Lupin out, but he wasn't about to reflect on it. He wasn't about to give in to pity. He had better things to do. It was decided not to tell Potter about Black's death, but it seemed that somehow he still found out. He kept a low profile, continued to regularly attend his training programme, kept up his routine, answered in the classroom. Now he knew more than Severus about the moons of Saturn, and not just about Dione. Once again, Severus made sure that he was not mistaken in his choice. Potter could handle it, in every way. But he didn't want to talk anymore. "I have to go. Sorry, I'm late for training. I'm tired, I think I'll get some rest." "Goodbye, sir. See you tomorrow." And Potter turned so as not to bump shoulders in the doorway, so as not to brush past, even accidentally. These were all little things. They didn't bother Severus. He'd been shunned before. He'd been neglected. He'd been ignored. He was despised. After all, Potter might as well have been told Severus's dark little secret. One would have to wonder which one. There were too many of them, too many dark little secrets. Too many reasons for alienation. Severus began to watch the training. And he wasn't the only one. The psychologist sounded the alarm. He'd suggested an exercise for stress tolerance. The first time, at the very beginning of his training, Potter coped with brilliance. This time, he began to gasp. The simulation camera shook, the asteroid rain flew into the windshield, the lights flashed, and one had to act fast. To survive, it was necessary to act not only quickly, but with lightning speed. This time, Potter started well. He confidently turned the levers, activated the emergency protection system, then mixed up the buttons, then pressed everything. The siren screaming louder, almost bursting his eardrums, the camera shaking, the chair jerking from side to side. Potter grabbed his head with his hands and screamed. Wildly, like an animal, screaming a single note. The psychologist put out an urgent call on the intercom, but there was no need. Snape was already racing down the corridor to the training room. He climbed into the cockpit. Potter was curled up on the floor, gasping. "Up." Just like the other day, in the corridor. Snape grabbed him under his armpits, hauled him to his feet, but Potter leant against him like a bag of sand. Severus wrapped one arm around Potter's waist and slapped him in the face with the other. Potter's eyes darted open. His jaw dropped and he wheezed. "Distinctive features of Dionium. Answer me. Now," Severus barked.
"Gr-gr-een,"
Potter breathed. He breathed out and in. Then he sobbed, went limp, and suddenly pressed against Severus, burying his face in Severus's chest. Severus patted Potter awkwardly on the shoulder. Only Potter held tightly around his waist because he was still struggling to stand upright. "Sorry," Potter muttered into Severus's chest, warming the fabric of the uniform with his breath. "I don't know... why?" Then Severus had to do something that deeply disgusted him and was contrary to all his principles. He invited Potter to tea. Neither of them drank tea, so they sat on uncomfortable chairs and stared at each other. "I've been having dreams," Potter muttered, looking away.
"So do I," Snape snapped. "It's a natural mental process."
"About Mum and Dad?" Severus sighed. "About how it all happened. I was small, but I think something is preserved in my memory, and in my dreams I can see it all happening."
"How long?"
"Hmm?
How long have you been having these dreams, Potter?"
"Only lately. A couple of times."
"Liar."
Harry shook his head.
"Honestly, sir, shall I make you write lines? Like infant school, Potter. I must not tell lies."
Potter let out a breath, his shoulders drooping. "I'm sorry. Forgive me. I was worried that you'd replace me with Neville. Or Draco. I'm really ready to fly. I can handle it." Severus tried to relax in his chair as impressively as Lucius could.
It's time I taught you the basics of the mental arts.
The singing astronaut smiled from the screens, as if he wasn't dying.
You have always been remarkably dense, Potter.
Severus paced around Harry, who was standing to attention.
No talent, no diligence. A waste of my time.
Harry stared ahead.
You are useless. Do you think you can run away into space and all your problems will be solved? And when you come back, they'll carry you in their arms? Do you think anyone will be waiting for you at all? You're too naive, Potter. Fame isn't everything. I can't even guarantee you will be famous.
I don't want fame, Potter muttered.
Severus barked, Silence! You will speak when I permit you. You will do as I say, because I am your commanding officer and you are nothing, Potter. You are nothing but an arrogant boy who only thinks of himself.
Harry's jaw clenched. His eyebrows drew together. Severus let out his most contemptuous chuckle. He looked Harry up and down, knowing how uncomfortable the applicant was under that gaze.
Fool. Whelp. Idiot. Slacker. You're just pathetic. Enough! Enough already. Stop!
Harry shouted angrily, turning to Snape, who was standing behind him.
The wall. The glass wall, remember? Severus said irritably. Get that basic knowledge into your thick skull. Are you not even capable of this little step? What are you going to do in space, then? What have you done to deserve this honour? Have you done anything for this at all?
He spoke the unfair words as he watched the anger on Potter's face fade to a detached expression. His entire body was still tense, his fists clenched, but Potter fought his anger, gradually regaining his composure.
Watch your breathing, Severus advised, walking behind Harry again. You are nothing. Nobody needs you. Not a single person. What do you want to achieve with your flight? Do you think you'll be loved more? Do you think you'll be noticed? So eager to earn a little attention, Potter. Are you willing to grovel for it? Ready to hop on your hind legs like a begging dog? Come on, notice me. I'm here. I exist. At least somebody loved me. Because here I am. I'm back.
Severus stopped short. Potter was calm. He'd learnt to build barriers to become invulnerable. Severus licked his lips. The words were bitter. He suddenly felt like walking away, with an excuse about an urgent matter.
Sir? Potter whispered. Not bad. You did it, Severus said dully, closing his eyes.
He breathed, pulled himself together. He imagined a white field, an edgeless white field. Only smoothness and silence. In a second, he was ready to continue.
That's enough practice for today. Have a seat.
Harry slumped into a chair that Severus had dragged into his office for convenience. He rarely used this room at the base. He had his own office in the Science Centre. But it wasn't particularly cosy there, either. Now his office had armchairs, a mirror to track the physical manifestations of stress, and even a few soothing pictures. Though they were more annoying than soothing to Severus.
Any dreams?
A few days ago. The day before yesterday. Nothing since.
Good. And your meditation?
I tried. I'm not good at not thinking about things.
You don't need to be. The whole thing about clearing your mind isn't about not thinking about anything. It's about taking one word and repeating it. Concentrating completely on it. Repeatedly until it loses its meaning.
I'm trying to.
What word did you take?
Harry averted his eyes. It's personal. Can I not say it?
Severus snorted. So childish. It doesn't matter either way. Try another word if that one doesn't work. Are fears plaguing you?
Potter seemed offended.
No, sir. There's no shame in being afraid, Severus said doubtfully. I know two techniques, if need be. You will do them.
Now, the breathing.
I'm still struggling to breathe in the cockpit. The worst part is I know in my head that I can make it stop, but when I can't breathe, I panic. You know how they helped asthmatics in the old days, when masks and inhalers weren't invented yet? They were told to sing. Sing or recite poetry. When you sing, your throat and abdomen relax and your breathing normalises. Especially songs that are long, like lullabies. Poems also calm the breath. There's a rhythm to them, breathing in and out. And you occupy your mind with remembering lines and distracting yourself from worry and anxiety. Potter smiled. He liked the idea. So what? I get in the cockpit and start singing. Is that it?
Is that it? Severus mimicked. He smiled at the corner of his lips.
Potter ruffled his hair, fidgeted in his seat. Severus wondered how quickly this picture had become familiar. Potter sitting across from him. Relaxed, smiling. Trusting. Harry. Severus gripped the armrests, forcing his thoughts back on track.
Well, or poetry. Do you know any?
Potter furrowed his brow. Once upon a time, somewhere was a crooked man. Something, something crooked, mile. There was, crooked mice. Do-do-do, tram-pam-pam in a little crooked house.
Amazing, Severus said, clapping a couple of times.
Potter shook his head, confused. We learnt it at primary school. Forgotten it all now.
Then sing, Severus said mercilessly.
Potter opened his mouth and sang the Albion National Anthem.
I'm actually scared,
the singing astronaut said.
You were right. I'm scared after all, but not of dying. It's so quiet here. I talk, and it gets even quieter. If the camera's broken and you can't hear me, nobody can hear me. Nobody.
The singing astronaut closed his eyes and sighed. For a second, his face twisted into a grimace, and it seemed that he was about to cry. Millions of people froze in front of their screens. The singing astronaut took a breath, another, his lips moving as if he were repeating the same word over and over. He exhaled, pressed his lips into a firm line, and inhaled. The singing astronaut opened his eyes.
You were right. The worst thing is the loneliness.
Chapter 4. Gently. A little nudge, that's it. Severus lets out a breath, his fingers clutching the helm, unwilling to unclench. It seemed to him impossible to unlearn, like riding a bike. He didn't even look out the porthole. Stars, his stars. For so many years he'd seen them in his dreams, searched for them, jumping into a black pool, and waking up in a sweat. He'd waited so many years to return. But now he doesn't need space, he doesn't need stars. He needs time, at least another 24 hours, for him to hold out for just one more day. The singing astronaut on the screen takes infrequent breaths in and out. His eyes dart to the oxygen indicator over and over again. His face is dark with stubble.
Sleep, Severus says to the screen. Get some sleep. Your breathing will be more even and will relieve your emotional stress.
The singing astronaut keeps his eyes wide open. He doesn't want to sleep through the last hours of his life.
Base Earth, Albion 1, do you read me? Over.
Yes, reading you loud and clear, Severus.
Here comes the surprise. The gentle voice on the intercom is not Moody's wheezing. If Severus isn't mistaken, and he can't be, the Admiral of the Fleet himself is on the line. This is bad. Or is it good? This is not the time to work it out.
The cruiser KK-14609 has landed on Dione. I am going to track down Harry Potter. Over.
Save him, my boy,
is the soft plea from the intercom. This is who Moody learnt from, Severus thinks. You are the chosen one, my boy. You will save the world.
I don't know if I can,
Severus replies. But first, he turns off the intercom. Two months before liftoff. Severus couldn't tell how it had happened. An accidental touch, hot breath on his cheek. Potter pulled away, apologised, eyes narrowing cheerfully. At night, Severus dreamt of green stars again. Two stars, bright green. Closer and closer, and then,
He woke up, curled up in bed. Between his legs was wet and hot. He thought he'd wet the bed like he did as a child. Then he realised that this was different, but no less embarrassing. And something he hadn't done for a long time, since his school days. Severus punished himself with a cold shower, the jets blasting his skin so hard they almost bruised his body, but the contempt hit harder. Pervert, filthy, disgusting, animal. I hate it. I hate it. Not again. No. He'd coped with this for so many years. He swore he'd never repeat what he'd done with Lucius. Never again. Not for anything. It was better to die. But damned Potter showed up, and Severus wanted to die when he hadn't seen him for a day or two. When he had to skip lessons to attend to more urgent matters. When Potter disappeared into the training room. He wanted to die. No, he wanted to see him. He wanted to be around him all the time. So humiliating. If it was just sex, if it was just intercourse, copulation, coitus, it would be simpler, it would be easier to overcome. But this was worse than sex. It was Potter. It was just Potter. Severus forced himself to postpone lessons. Besides, Potter could cope fine without him. He always did. Severus was imposing his need on Potter, imposing questions, probing for weaknesses, and Potter did an excellent job. He was ready. It was Severus who was failing, with himself, for the first time. Please love me. The Admiral of the Fleet visited their base. A great honour. But Severus was not honoured by it. His position was precarious as it was. But the Admiral spoke to Potter. Severus was sure it would inflate the boy with self-importance. He almost hoped it would. Potter knocked at his office door. "I'm busy," Snape muttered. The door cracked open. Severus looked up from his papers to bark at the stupid fool who can't comprehend human language, but stopped short. Then he sighed. Then he put the papers aside. "Well, come in." Potter sank into the chair as if he'd returned home. He looked unusually pensive. "Sir, may I ask you a question?"
"You're already asking a question."
Harry grimaced.
"Well, get on with it then," Snape snapped.
He was suddenly nervous for no reason. His mouth was dry. He expected nothing good from the upcoming conversation, though he had no idea what it would be about. "You liked flying, didn't you?"
"Once. I've only flown once."
"And did you like it?"
"It doesn't fit into flat definitions such as like or dislike," Severus said dryly. "But in general, yes. I like it."
"Then why..." Harry pressed his lips together. Severus stared at the desk for a moment. Then he got up and strode around the office. He stopped at a painting, a pale blue sky and green meadows. Harry didn't turn and continued to look forwards. He was no longer nervous when Severus stood behind him.
"Why don't I fly any longer? I'm not permitted to. Any more questions?"
Harry didn't answer for a long time. "Yes," he said at last. Snape closed his eyes. This means that the conversation was inevitable, after all.
"You spoke to the Admiral of the Fleet," Severus said, "and he gave you some information about me. After which you hastened here to confirm or deny what he told you."
"It wasn't a question," so Harry said nothing.
"That said, you've already formed an opinion, and my words in any case cannot outweigh the words of the Admiral of the Fleet. You don't need to listen to my side of the story. So why are you here?"
"The Admiral said you were the first one to discover dionium. Is that true?"
"Yes."
"You never mentioned it in class."
"It's not in the textbooks."
"Why not?" Severus smirked. "Because I am not worthy."
"If you know too much, you'll get old fast."
"That's rich."
"I also feel old. No, ancient, in fact." Harry laughed. "You obviously haven't seen the Admiral's beard."
Severus suddenly felt relief wash over him. Why had he been so worried? This was Harry, after all. This was his Harry Potter. Severus returned to his chair.
I'm going to tell you something, and I'm going to ask you to keep your mouth shut. Whoever needs to know already knows.
Harry nodded, eyes wide and leaning forwards. Severus couldn't help but smile at Potter's enthusiasm.
I spent 11 years in prison.
Harry frowned incredulously.
I spent 2 of those years in solitary confinement, then spent the rest of the years working in a labour camp. Working for the good of the motherland.
Severus grimaced. Then I negotiated my freedom.
Have you heard of a suspended sentence? Well, I'm on conditional release. It's very strict. If not for my research, I would still be sitting in a white cell. But I am here, working for the good of the motherland.
Severus was still smirking. Some things are easier to say in a nonchalant tone, shielded by a smile. Potter was still frowning at Severus.
It can't be. Potter, of the 2 of us, you are the one who likes to lie, so don't doubt my words.
I only lied once, Harry snapped. Then he shook his head. What were you convicted of?
Severus gritted his teeth.
Espionage. I betrayed strategic military intelligence to the Lord and Nagini.
Harry shook his head again. He's going to leave now, Severus thought calmly.
No, Harry said. No, you didn't.
Why such confidence? I know you. You would never do that.
Severus wanted to sneer, to comment, at least say something. But he realised that his voice had left him. He opened his mouth, closed it. Something ached in his chest.
Sir? Severus? Are you all right?
Harry's voice sounded distant. The thud of a chair being pulled back. A touch. A touch. His hands burnt through the fabric of the uniform. He was close. He supported Severus's shoulders. He was so close. So close. Please say something. Damn it, Severus? The name from his lips sounded renewed. It sparkled. As if there was no dirt on the word. As if there was no shadow on it. As if thousands of other lips hadn't trampled or dirtied it. Harry bent down to look Severus in the face. Severus reached up to kiss Harry. Their lips met. Severus sobered instantly, immediately. Reality fell on him with all its ruthlessness. He had ruined everything. He ruined everything after all. Scum. Always had, always will. Freak. Spoiled. Ruined everything.
Potter, I...
Severus got up too abruptly, and the chair tipped over. Harry blinked up in confusion. His gaze slid over Severus's face as if unrecognizing, or as if finally discerning the true nature of it.
I advise you to forget about what happened here,
Severus said in a strangled voice. His heart pounded under his ribs with the desperation of a kamikaze, trying to break through them, get out of his chest.
For the greater good. Now go.
For the first time, Severus's imperative directions didn't work. Harry wrapped his arms around Severus and kissed his chest, right where his heart was beating under the fabric, skin, flesh and bone. Severus's world shook and collapsed.
Potter.
Potter, Severus muttered helplessly. Harry sighed heavily.
So, you too. I didn't dream. I don't understand.
Severus choked out. But Potter interrupted him with surprising impudence. I like you. He said it as one word, in one breath, in one gulp. And right on target. Severus gasped, his eyes darkened with realization of what had just been said and what it could mean. And as the darkness dissipated, 2 bright green stars slowly appeared through it, like on a faulty screen. Severus staggered as Harry released him. Harry turned away and walked towards the door. He left without looking back. Severus righted the chair, straightened the papers on the desk. He looked at his trembling hands. He wanted to bring them to his lips, but interrupted himself mid-movement. Four 4:45 in the morning. The fifth day began.
The singing astronaut's pupils contracted so much they looked like a stem on a gooseberry. He hadn't said a word for the last 3 hours, and the pre-dawn ratings had dropped. He just looked and was silent. At 4:46, he parted his lips and grinned.
The avocado was just stupid.
Severus didn't know what would be more cowardly, avoiding Harry or seeking a meeting with him. He couldn't decide what would be worse. Severus had a lot of work to do, and that solved everything. He always had a lot of work, but never before had it been so necessary, so desirable to do. For the entire month, Severus left the office only to visit the general, and in the evenings he spent time conjuring in the laboratory, over the tiny glove-burning speck of dionium they had at their disposal. He bumped into Harry often, but how could he not? The world was small, the base even smaller. He saw him in the corridors, ran into him on the stairs a couple of times. Once, a week after what had happened in the office, Harry approached Severus.
Sir, will we have more lessons?
I'm very busy at the moment. Harry nodded, his fringe falling over his face, and he pushed his hair away with an annoyed movement. The corner of his dry lips quirked up in a bitter expression.
Are we going to have more lessons?
Draco mocked, approaching Harry. Severus didn't turn around. He was in too much of a hurry to get to the office, to the laboratory, anywhere. Harry didn't approach him again. Severus watched him. He couldn't do otherwise. The security cameras, in the simulators, the training hall, the canteen, the corridors, and Harry. Severus couldn't help but think about what had happened between them, and he couldn't help but think that he should give time to think, to Harry. Hadn't he stirred up disgust, an awareness of the unnaturalness of what had happened? Did he realise what he'd done? What they had both done? Had he told anyone? Was he disappointed? What did he expect? What did he want? How much did he know about Severus's past? During the interrogations, everything had surfaced. There comes a moment when a person, broken, cut in two, begins to spew secrets, big and small, their own and others, anything just to end the torment. Just as long as they would finish with him for the day. Severus told them everything, choking on the bitter truth like vomit. He spoke as if in a confession booth, only afterwards he felt dirtier than before. That is irrelevant, he was told, and they continued the interrogation. That time the interrogation dragged on until late at night. He was being punished. It seemed that all the following suffering was for this, for his depravity, for the unnaturalness of his desires, for his weakness, for putting his arse on the line and for getting pleasure from it, and for having the audacity to tell them, to dump it at their feet, fetid, ugly, painful. For what they had to listen to, for listening to everything, the whole truth in detail, and as they pulled it out of himself, getting him to shout what he couldn't admit to himself, I would do it again. It was good. It was the best I've ever felt. Whilst witnessing his tears. The dreams continued to plague his nights. Screens filled his life during the day. Severus couldn't take it any longer. He couldn't. He opened the training hall door and slipped inside. It was twilight. The overhead lights were extinguished, the hall was empty. Harry, as always, stayed late, repeating basic manoeuvres in the simulation cruiser. Now he was lying on the floor, with his hands behind his head and thinking about something. Maybe he too was exhausting himself all this time, in order not to remember, not to tarry. Severus stopped beside Harry and looked down. He should have said something, but Severus couldn't get his thoughts in order. Harry sat up in one quick motion, tilted his head back, tangled strands scattering across his forehead. Severus stated the obvious, "You need a haircut." Harry smiled, his eyes crinkling at the corners. He smelt of sweat, and his tracksuit fitted his body like a second skin. "Yeah, probably." Severus held out his hand, and Harry grasped it. His palm was warm and slightly damp. Severus helped Harry up, but didn't let go of his hand. Harry was standing so close, so close. He looked at Severus uncertainly, not knowing what to expect. "You can't sleep either?" Harry finally asked,
in a hushed voice. Severus nodded sharply.
"Would you like me to apologize?" Harry asked.
"For what?"
"For what I said and did. I shouldn't have kissed you."
"You mustn't."
"I can apologize if you like."
"Do you want to?"
Harry lowered his gaze. He shook his head.
"Then you don't have to."
"Do you want to?"
Harry sighed. Severus squeezed his hand tighter and Harry continued, barely audibly,
"Would you like me to kiss you again?"
Severus swallowed. "I'll kiss you myself." This time he managed to retain his ability to feel. He could feel the warmth and insistence of his lips, the roughness of his poorly shaven chin, faint body odour, the smoothness of his teeth, the soft tongue pressing against his lips. He realised with astonishment that Harry was a good kisser, as far as he, Severus, could judge with his meagre experience. And yet he suddenly realised that he didn't care anymore how this was going to end, so long as it continued. As they pulled apart, Severus looked intently at Harry. He asked slowly, warily, "Are you sure you want this?" Harry raised his eyebrows in surprise. Then he bit his lip. He pressed in tighter, closer, and Severus felt the hardness of his erection. "What do you think?" Harry asked huskily. Severus slowly lowered his hand. He took his time and tried to figure out if he was terrified or delighted. Finally, he squeezed the bulge in Harry's tracksuit. Harry drew in a sharp breath between clenched teeth. Severus kissed Harry again, his own arousal peaking. "Please," Harry breathed. "Let's go back to my place."
"Yes," Severus said.
"Yes, yes." Harry opened the doors to his compartment with the code key sewn into the sleeve of his training uniform. The doors closed behind Severus, cutting off any escape route. Severus was unwilling to analyse his actions. Harry's confident voice still rang in his ears. "I know you, and I like you." Shouldn't one preclude the other? Everything inside Severus clenched as he thought. This could be another dream and he'd wake in a few minutes, staining the sheets again. Harry made his way to the middle of the living room, frozen in confusion. His compartment was as spacious as a luxury suite. Rooms at the base were not in short supply. A study, living room, kitchen, bathroom, bedroom. Severus sat on the sofa, feeling silly. Harry looked around the room as if looking for something to offer his guest. "Tea? Oh, I don't have any tea bags." Harry opened the minibar and pulled out a protein shake. "Do you want one?"
"No, thank you," Severus muttered.
Here, have an avocado." Harry seemed surprised at his own suggestion, but he still thrust the green fruit into Severus's hand. Severus stared at the avocado, then looked at Harry.
"Thank you."
He and Harry stared at each other for a few seconds, then laughed. "Okay, this is just stupid," Harry said, and Severus nodded. He put the avocado on the sofa next to him.
"Come here."
Peeling off Harry's tracksuit was surprisingly enjoyable. Harry sighed, tilted his head back, and Severus covered his Adam's apple with kisses, making Harry swallow. His hands, meanwhile, pulled the thin fabric from Harry's shoulders. When the suit dropped to his feet like a shed snakeskin, Harry shivered from cold or excitement. Severus looked at Harry's handsome, strong torso, his legs, his thick pink cock curving slightly to the right and fully aroused. "Come on." Harry held out his hand. "Bedroom. I'll show you."
"I don't need to be led by the hand. I am ready to go quite willingly."
Harry laughed again, a little nervously. He turned and walked towards one of the doors. Severus followed him. The bedroom was empty. A standard bed, a standard wardrobe, and a pristine bedside table by the headboard. Even Severus's home was cosier. Harry paused, lost, by the bed, completely naked, nervous.
You need help with that?
He reached for the buttons on Severus's shirt, and Severus could barely restrain himself from pulling back. Button by button, his pulse pounded in his ears, Nausea rolled up to his throat. Is everything all right? Harry asked quietly, staring at Severus anxiously. There could be no other answer.
Yes.
His clothes fell to the floor. Fortunately, Harry didn't linger to look at the scars, blemishes and marks that covered Severus's body. He climbed onto the bed, and Severus was there beside him, kissing Harry quickly and briefly, afraid to change his mind, afraid to meet his gaze. Severus dug kisses into Harry's neck and shoulders, caressing his chest with his tongue and fingers, scraping his nipples and covering them with his palms until all Harry could do was shiver and let out cries of pleasure. Severus straddled Harry's legs and squeezed Harry's wrists against the bed. Harry groaned, arching up as Severus leant over his erect cock, and wrapped the head with his lips. Harry's chest heaved. A bead of sweat slid down his stomach into the crater of his navel. Severus squeezed the head with his lips as tightly as he could, and caressed the frenulum with quick strokes of his tongue. Harry shook his head helplessly, jerking his hands, trying to break free of Severus's grip, trying to grab onto him himself. Severus sucked Harry's cock into his mouth, trying to fit it all in, relaxing his throat. Many years had passed since he'd done something like this, and back then, pleasing a partner with his mouth had been a duty, not a pleasure. Now everything had changed. Severus enjoyed every moan, every breath that escaped Harry's lips. He liked the feeling of the strong body trembling beneath him. Bending his head rhythmically at Harry's groin, Severus inhaled the scent of Harry's body. Special, unique, unlike anything else. When Severus pulled away, Harry was still trembling. Severus let go of Harry's hands, regretting to see red marks on his slender wrists from Severus's grip. Harry reached for his groin, exhausted, wanting to see it through, but Severus stopped him.
Not like that.
Yes, please, please. Harry mumbled incoherently, spreading his legs. Severus shook his head. He should have said something, but the words couldn't come.
Not like that, he repeated quietly, and then got down on all fours, not looking at Harry's face.
Oh, he heard Harry cry softly. Oh, you want me to...
Get a move on, Potter, Severus said roughly, burning with shame. The sheets rustled and Harry pulled back. Severus shook his head in disbelief. Had he done something wrong, said something wrong? Was Harry going to leave?
But the next second his back was touched, softly, affectionately. Harry stroked him between the shoulder blades, ran his fingertips, barely touching, to his lower back, slid along his thighs in a weightless motion. Harry's hand was so firm, so sure, as Harry wrapped his hand around Severus's painfully aroused cock. The groan that escaped Severus came out hoarse and desperate. Severus pushed his hips into Harry's hand and then gasped for air as Harry slid his other hand between his buttocks and found his hole. Licking his fingers well, Harry stretched and stroked the ring of muscles just enough to make Severus not only relax, but turn into a sobbing madman trembling with pleasure. Harry was too careful, even. As if oblivious to his own arousal, he was in no hurry to penetrate with his fingers, instead caressing the sensitive area again and again. When Harry finally slid in two fingers, Severus cried out and leant back, ignoring the pain. The long-forgotten sensation of penetration brought Severus such an avalanche of pleasure that it seemed worth waiting for so long. Harry moved his fingers and the faint burning sensation quickly faded and was replaced by waves of pleasure, intensifying with each thrust. Finally, Severus shook his head. Stop. Stop. Harry froze, and Severus breathed through gritted teeth, trying to stay in control. Too close, too much. The last thing Severus wanted was to embarrass himself in front of Harry. When the danger had passed, Severus sagged at the waist and commanded, Come on. Harry took a shaky breath. He put the head of his cock at the entrance, then froze, as if waiting for something. Severus, just don't expect anything extraordinary, okay? His voice sounded uncertain, so Severus didn't comment on the absurd remark. Extraordinary. As if there could be even more pleasure than what Harry could give him. As if it was possible not to wait for him. Harry entered in one smooth thrust, all the way in. And then he began to move smoothly,
his wonderful curved cock hitting his prostate with impressive accuracy, making Severus cry out. Harry placed his hands on Severus's hips, guiding, holding, digging his nails into his skin, his movements becoming sharper, more forceful. Each thrust shattered Severus to the ground and revived him from ashes, cinders, dust. Harry purified Severus's body the way he purified his name, as simple and natural as if there was nothing more right, as if there was nothing more beautiful in the world, than to be together. Severus closed his eyes and shuddered, cum splashing onto the sheets. Harry, as if he'd been waiting for this, gave two more powerful thrusts and groaned low, sprawled across Severus's back. Harry's heart pounded fast and intensely. Severus felt the tremors on his back as he felt the thrusts of strong hips from behind a few seconds ago. With the last of his strength, Severus pulled back the covers and crawled under them. Harry nestled beside him, rolling onto his back. For several minutes they lay in silence, basking in their shared happiness. Then Harry said with a weak chuckle, "After all, you showed me the stars." "One more platitude in bed and you'll get a reprimand," Severus threatened, closing his eyes. When the oxygen indicator dropped to 1, the alarm went off. Critical oxygen level, critical oxygen level. At intervals of every minute, this piercing shriek erupted from the speakers, causing the singing astronaut to frown, forcing the people who clung to the screens on planet Earth to turn down the volume. Many parents at that moment told their children to go to their bedrooms. But no one found the strength, or perhaps the weakness, to turn off the screen. No one looked away. And when the singing astronaut sang Dido's Lament, the ratings broke all records. With only weeks to go, the astronauts were not overloaded. They still followed their diets, daily routines and daily checkups, but they no longer needed to train so much. They had some free time on their hands. Severus, on the other hand, had his most crucial days. He checked everything that had been checked several more times. He calculated hundreds of possibilities. He drew charts. He perfected the intelligence system of the cruiser. He reported to the general even the slightest change in the design plans. And the waiting. The waiting was maddening. The impatience, the trembling of his fingertips, the bitterness at the tip of his tongue. The tension that accumulated over many years reached its climax at the final stage of the project. Meetings with Harry helped him stay sane. They were now rare, but every time they were alone, Harry and Severus pressed into each other like magnets, touching, joining their lips, sharing breaths and sighs. Severus stroked Harry's unruly hair, passing the strands between his fingers. Harry kissed Severus under the chin, resting his head on his shoulder. On one occasion, Severus secured leave for himself and a day off for Harry. One day, one night, Severus brought Harry to his home. He was a little embarrassed by the bare walls and the cobwebs gathered in the corners, brushed with dust. But Harry, oddly enough, liked Severus's abode. "It's great in here. I wish I could live in a house like this," Harry admitted shyly. Severus looked around in surprise, trying to see the room through Harry's eyes. But he could not. All he could see was emptiness and loneliness. However, there was one thing he could boast about. "Let me show you something." Severus wiped the dust off the plastic box. "Whoa, is this what I think it is?" Harry carefully held the disc, spreading his fingers. The smooth silver cast reflections on the walls. After a couple of minutes, an unhurried soprano echoed throughout the room. Harry closed his eyes, swaying. "Sounds like a lullaby, except for the words." Severus walked over to Harry and held him.
was a lullaby. My mother used to sing it to me. Yeah, the words aren't the most soothing.
So sad, Harry whispered. And Severus did his best to distract Harry from anything that might make him frown, lower his lashes, covering desperate green eyes. But later, whilst they were in bed, Harry asked Severus to play the song again. And again, and again, and again. He listened, spellbound, and squeezed Severus's hand painfully under the covers. Dido was the queen of Carthage. That's in Africa. Severus said quietly as Harry lowered his head onto his chest and closed his eyes. She loved Aeneas, a Trojan prince, a conqueror of the sea. She didn't know that all conquerors of the seas were conquered by the sea. Aeneas left Dido when it was time to set sail. And Dido left this world by stepping into the funeral pyre. A simple story. A bedtime story. Harry said nothing, falling asleep or pretending to. Severus closed his eyes. Dido cried and prayed.
Remember me. Remember me.
As if he suddenly found himself in a darkened nursery, where his mother sang out the words in a voice too tired for the heavy words.
Probably worth visiting her grave, Severus thought suddenly. Severus woke up early in the morning with a strange, aching feeling of happiness. This had not happened to him for so long that he was confused. Half asleep, he could feel Harry lightly stroking his neck with his fingertips, mindlessly tracing the old scars. Severus pretended to be asleep so Harry wouldn't stop. It felt so nice, so good. When the alarm clock rang, Harry sat up in bed. The weekend was over, and it was time to head back to base. They had entered the last leg. 1.5 weeks remained before liftoff. The loose grey surface crunches and breaks underfoot. Tiny ice crystals sparkle like broken glass. The domed black sky overhead presses down with all its might, impenetrable. Dusty, draped in shadows, Dione opens up before Severus. Exactly the same as it was all those years ago. He longs to say, well, hello, or I'm back, but that would be silly, so he remains silent. The singing astronaut is also silent on the screen. He stares into the void in front of him, counting down the minutes. What does he see? Nothing is reflected in his eyes. Severus checks the approximate coordinates that the singing astronaut gave on the first day he was trapped. And sets off. Chapter 5. 3 strikes. The sound came out hollow and wooden, collapsing into the silence like an abyss. Severus clasped his fingers together, hands dropping powerlessly onto the table. Come in. Harry smiled from the threshold, stepped towards the table, and even bent down as if for a kiss, but recoiled when he met Severus's gaze. He sat down in the chair opposite. What is it? He asked in a low voice. Your profile. The words sounded dry, crumbling in his mouth. Harry tilted his head towards his shoulder, frowning in bewilderment. What about it?
still lying, until the last. Severus closed his eyes, waiting out a fit of rage. He would not hit the applicant. That would be the end. The end of everything. It was already the end, but he had to continue, say meaningless words, make meaningless movements, even though it was already over. Your eyes. Your vision. Harry froze. His lips compressed into a thin line. He met Severus's gaze directly, with no remorse. So bright. Bright green. The perfect weapon. How did you forge the medical report? Severus wasn't even interested, but he had to ask. The answer didn't surprise him. My friend helped me. I won't name him. Of course you won't. Severus, I... His hand went numb almost immediately, hitting the hard tabletop, and Severus slowly straightened his fingers, unclenching his fist. His fingers trembled a little. Bastard. Severus, he whispers. Look, I really... It's nothing. You're taking it too seriously. I'm sorry. Forgive me. I didn't want to lie to you. I didn't want to lie at all. I just... This is my dream, you know? I've always looked at the sky and thought that one day... Severus, my eyesight is fine now. I corrected it years ago, so it doesn't matter. Do you know, Severus said, barely audible but Harry fell silent, what the consequences can be if there is a severe drop in pressure? Your vision was corrected with halo rays. Delicate work. It would be a pity if your eyeballs burst on the third day of your flight. It won't happen. I looked into it and it's all right. I know the odds are 1 in 10,000. I'm willing to take the risk. There will be no risk. Not in my project. Severus's face twisted, and he let his gaze express all the contempt he had for Potter. You've made up your mind for yourself, haven't you? You're entitled to risk your life, your sight, whatever you please. You're an adult. You are your own idiot. But what right did you have to risk the project? What use do I have for a blind astronaut on Dione? It's not going to happen, Severus, Harry exclaimed desperately. Hell, I'll be fine. I've been preparing for months. I've sacrificed so much. Don't you dare talk of sacrifice. Not you. What do you know of sacrifice? Severus shook his head. You will not derail my project. I won't let you. A runt was going to risk everything. Everyone. It's not like that. You don't understand, Severus. Please, please, please. Harry wrapped his arms around himself. My eyes are fine. They'll be fine. It's a tiny, tiny possibility, after all. I've come so far. I know I was stupid. I shouldn't have lied, not to you. But it's too late now. Let me fly. I have to fly. You owe your life to your parents. Harry jerked his entire body as if he'd been struck. Your mother. She died to protect you. You told me that yourself. But apparently, her sacrifice was in vain. After all, her sacrifices don't even come close to yours. You sacrificed so much. You didn't drink tea or coffee. Just think about all that time you spent spinning in a centrifuge. You were going to give your life for the good of Albion. Apparently your life is truly worthless. Thus, the death of your mother is worthless too. Severus's teeth clashed as Harry's fist slammed into his chin. Harry's punch was awkward, inept, but still his teeth ached. Severus raised his hand and rubbed his chin. Harry stood up, hands by his side, face blank. Let me go, Mr. Snape. Severus nodded. Harry walked out, closing the door carefully. Immediately after that, he heard a dull thump from the corridor. His fist will break, but not the wall, Severus thought distantly, and he bent over his paperwork. It hurt badly, very badly, but it didn't hurt his face at all.
Whilst I'm taking my last breath, twinkle for me and be blessed.
The song trailed off. He took a long, shaky breath. The singing astronaut then said,
0 on 1. This is the end.
These words rang in every home with a screen. People all over the entire planet watched with their own eyes,
as the singing astronaut closed his eyes, licked his lips, and sang his last song. He was choosing between Longbottom and Malfoy. Malfoy was better at the practicals, but Longbottom excelled at the rest. He knew as much about Dionium as if he'd discovered it himself. Severus decided that he was the one to fly, and was surprised by Narcissa Malfoy's call. She'd got it into her head that Severus had broken his vow and was sending her son into space. Severus didn't confirm her suspicions, but he didn't take the trouble to justify himself to her either, ending the conversation. He didn't have time to deal with other people's tantrums. He couldn't even throw his own. Severus thought about Harry's actions every second. It sat in him like a splinter, like a constant pain. Liar. "I'm fine. Nothing hurts. This hasn't happened before, sir." What else could he lie about if lying came so easily to him? So many years of work, so many preparations, so much time and effort spent, all plans and hopes, his whole life, contained in his Dion A project, and everything is trampled, everything is destroyed by a spoilt brat who thinks he is above the rules. He lied. He really wanted to go into space. Severus should have made Potter write those lines after all. "I must not tell lies." 1,000 times he'd remember. Those words should have been carved into his body. "It's nothing," he'd said. It was nothing to him. Severus went to the general to report on the crew change. The general listened to him, smirked, twitching his ugly cheek, pitted with scars and wrinkles. "No." "But General Moody, Potter is not medically fit." "I have no reason to believe what you say. You've got circumstantial evidence. The boy's medical report is excellent. And the Admiral of the Fleet has already approved him. We won't shift plans around now." "Are you willing to jeopardise the entire project? I cannot guarantee the execution." "Well, you'd better." Severus suddenly realised that something was wrong. Something in Moody's tone, in his gaze. An examining look, his eyes filled with lazy disgust. It was that look that sent blood rushing to Severus's face, reminding him of the interrogation chamber. Severus felt powerless again, helpless. "What is it?" he asked sharply, crossing his arms. "What? What happened?" Moody tapped his index finger on the table. He shook his head thoughtfully. "It has come to my attention that you and the boy have found common ground. Well, how is he?" Moody knew. He was the only one at the base who knew. Severus went cold. He didn't want to. No, he wouldn't go through this again. The lone, mocking question from Moody turned what had happened between Severus and Harry into a crime, into something filthy, vile. Again. "I don't know what you want me to say." "Well, not complain about Potter, that's for sure." Moody smirked. "It would be dishonourable, right?" "I don't understand. Dishonourable, I say. To reject a boy because of personal disagreement. Work and the bedroom, Severus, must be separate." Severus gritted his teeth. He was sick of humiliation, and tears welled in his eyes. But, of course, he didn't let them spill. He went on the offensive, barked hoarsely, abruptly. "How dare you? You have no right to make such assumptions." "There, there. Keep your voice down." Moody opened a drawer, peered into it, and pushed it closed again. "I'm not framing you. Someone else is. There was an anonymous letter concerning you. And now you yourself confirmed it." "Anonymous?" Severus repeated in disgust. Moody pulled an envelope with no stamp from a drawer and waved it in front of Severus. "Don't bother asking. I won't let you read it. If it's true, then you know it's true. If it's not true, then you don't need to read that crap. Now go on. Off you go. Go and get our astronaut ready." Severus turned and strode towards the door with his back straight. "And look," Moody called, "don't make a scene. Stay away from him, at least until you get back from Dione. We don't need any more rumours or scandals here." Severus went out the door and stood in the corridor. The secretary looked up from the screen and raised her eyebrows in surprise. "Are you all right?" Severus looked at the girl in such a way that she flinched and turned away. He strode off, not caring which way he was going.
It seemed to him that everyone was aware of it. Everyone was watching. Everyone was whispering. Someone had sent this letter. Someone who knows everything. Seen them, watched, maybe laughed. Maybe recoiled in disgust. Nasty. And ashamed. How ashamed Severus was. The letter. The embarrassment. Moody's gaze. Harry's betrayal. The betrayal. The letter sent by someone who has no difficulty in lying, betraying, compromising their principles. Someone who knows everything. Someone who would do anything, anything for their cause. "I have to fly," he'd said. "You don't understand." He didn't understand. Severus didn't understand why he was being inflicted so much pain. He didn't want to make a scene. He was not going to. He'd enough shame, and there was no need to humiliate himself, begging Potter for an explanation. There was no need for any explanation. How could it fix the damage done? How could it relieve the pain, the shame? Harry found out himself. Apparently the general summoned Potter. Harry walked over to Severus, hunched over, confused. Harry looked into his eyes. Severus waited in silence. He didn't care what was said, what was done. Harry said nothing. Not a word. Severus didn't stop loving Harry. He could not. His feelings didn't listen to imperative commands. But all the hatred that was born in him had found a target. He remembered the words, "Scum, ugly, are you thick, unable to learn? And why aren't you dead? Why aren't you dead yet? I hate you. I hate you." Severus cut his hand, smashing his bathroom mirror. Perhaps that was as stupid as punching the corridor wall. When it was time to get Harry ready for liftoff, Severus was calm and polite. Like everyone else, he wished Harry good luck. Sincerely wished it. And then, a couple of days later, he fell to his knees in front of the screen, from which clear green eyes looked out.
"There's been a landslide. Think. I tried. I can't. Connect. Base Earth. Fell. I can't."
By the time the crashing of rocks and crunching of layers of ice had died down, he could be clearly heard, and the voice of Harry Potter no longer sounded so helpless and panicked. Helplessness and panic. That which gripped Severus's heart.
Zero and five. Zero and four. Zero and three.
The singing astronaut says nothing else. He only reads the levels of the indicator, as if he's telling death itself how long it must wait. Yes, he sings a nursery rhyme about a star. Each time his voice is quieter, fainter. It makes Severus hurry. Every time the singing astronaut licks his dry lips on his pocket screen, when the numbers sound in his earpiece, everything inside Severus freezes into ice, freezes into stone.
"Zero and two,"
the singing astronaut says, when Severus finds the correct crater. "Hold on," Severus says, but Harry can't hear him. The descent is difficult. Severus splits the boulders one by one so as not to provoke another landslide, but it takes so long. "Hold on," he repeats. His finger presses relentlessly into the solvent sensor button. He descends, clinging to the crater wall, lower and lower and lower into the darkness.
"Zero and one,"
the singing astronaut says, when there's only a little left.
"This is the end."
"No," Severus shouts. And then in his headphones he hears the quiet,
"When I am laid, in earth, may my wrongs create no trouble, no trouble in thy breast."
"No, no, no." Again and again, stone by stone, lower and lower. "Please, please." There is a flicker in the semi-darkness.
the green reflection of two eyes. Harry, Severus whispers, rolling almost head over heels, scattering rocks to the sides, sharp ice tearing at the lining of his suit.
Remember me. Remember me. But forget my fate.
I'm here, hold on, please hold on, Severus mutters. He was scattering the rocks, but now scatters the darkness with his hands, just to get to Harry. It's all over. Everything has worked out. He's saved. There he is. It's almost over.
Remember me, but forget my fate.
Harry, Severus shouts, finally reaching the two green lights. Two grains of dionium in the stone wall of the crater. In the earpiece, Harry's voice fades. No, it's not true. You can't die. Can't. Severus doesn't notice as he sinks deeper and deeper into the crater. There's not a sound in his earpiece. On screen, the singing astronaut opens his mouth wide, eyes squeezed shut. There is no more air. None. People huddling around the screens closed their eyes, unable to bear this agonizing spectacle. The sensitive ones wept. Many reached out to turn off their screens, to cover it with the palm of their hand, turn it away. Any way to end the prolonged agony. All the beauty and ugliness of death live on air. The wheezing, the strained face, the rolling eyes. Two boulders pinned him down. He couldn't even move his hands to grasp at his throat. Yes, many have turned off their screens. The six-day reality show, The Death of the Singing Astronaut, has come to an end. Thank you for remaining with us. Thank you for staying with us. Do not change the channel. Do not switch over the channel. And you will see how the convex mirror of the helmet reflects another helmet. How the ear-piercing alarm falls silent. How the quiet hiss of a spare tank replaces a used one. You've been watching this live stream for 6 days. After all, you deserve a happy ending. After all, don't you deserve it? Chapter 6. Little does he know that the spare cylinder Severus attaches to replace the spent one is already empty. Harry was near. So near to the two pinprick lights of dionium. One desperate dash to save him. Harry can no longer see Severus. By the time Severus is near, Harry's eyes are already closed. Severus lifts Harry's lifeless body out of the crater. He carries him in his arms to the cruiser. When the cruiser leaves Dione, Severus puts it on autopilot and leans over Harry. Severus carefully removes his helmet, clouded over with stone chips and covered in fine scratches. With a working camera. He tosses it aside. He strokes Harry's forehead, pushes aside his sweaty fringe. Harry's face seems unrecognizable, disfigured by death. Severus turns away from Harry and gets the dionium. All these years, all this work. The project has been a success after all. Severus holds two grains of deep green in the palm of his hand, just like Harry's eyes, only more honest. Dionium. Severus spent days, weeks, months, years studying its capabilities, studying the boundaries of its capabilities. There are none. Dionium. The perfect weapon. The perfect poison. The perfect antidote. Perfect. Dionium can cause 1,000 times more destruction than an atomic bomb. It can serve as a component to create fabric. Invisible fabric. Invisibility cloaks, invisible fighters. Dionium can do it all. It can cut a diamond. It can heal diseases. It can cause new ones. It is a versatile weapon, a harmony of defense and attack. a grain of concentrated power. It can even resurrect. Severus thanks himself, praises himself, loves himself. He's proud of himself for thinking of bringing a mobile lab, whilst he grinds two grains of dionium into dust, whilst he provokes a chemical reaction, whilst he checks the paperwork. Yes, yes, his latest development, which neither the General nor the Admiral of the Fleet knows about. One which Malfoy could never pass on to anyone. Which will die with him. Which will be resurrected with Harry. 4 hours later, the resurrection stone is ready. Tiny, about the size of a vitamin capsule. Porous, grey, round, like a miniature Dione, riddled with its craters. Severus pushes the stone as deep as he can down Harry's throat. Then he closes Harry's jaw and waits. 3.5 seconds stretch on. Harry opens his eyes and wheezes, sucking in air, gulping, choking, greedy, filling his lungs to the point of pain, to the limit. Severus sits beside him, holding Harry by the shoulders. He thinks about the fact that there's no way Harry is getting rid of the nickname the Singing Astronaut now. On the other hand, if people found out about his survival, they could come up with an even worse nickname. Cockroach, the Risen One, or, as in that old children's fairy tale, the Boy Who Lived. Severus holds Harry by the shoulders and thinks about rubbish. In the round portholes, space turns black. The stars are shining. The end. This story is written for the Russian Bottom Snape Fest in Spring Break 2012. And it was translated into English and narrated in June 2021. I hope you've enjoyed this story. Thank you for listening, and I hope to hear from you.